Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, to the United States. And in the USA this week, there were two important responses to racist incidents. Firstly, Starbucks closed 8,000 outlets across America to ask 175,000 employees to wrestle with the issue of who they make feel welcome. A mandatory four-hour racial bias training session for their staff. And that came in response to a racial profiling incident in Philadelphia when a white store manager called the cops on two black customers who simply were waiting for their friend to arrive before they ordered. Can you believe it? The incident was widely deplored and the international coffee chain suitably was ashamed and vowed to make some real change, cultural change. The other incident this week was a terrible racist tweet by comedian Roseanne Barr, whose comedy, her namesake comedy, this year was successfully rebooted, revived, to huge rating success by the American ABC television network. Now, in the tweet, Roseanne compared a former Barack Obama advisor, who is a black woman, and I can't believe I'm even saying this, she compared her to an ape. That tweet was sent in the early hours of the morning. It was supposed to be a tongue-in-cheek thing. Well, it was not funny. Roseanne went through a range of responses. At first, she deleted the tweet and apologised. Then she blamed the outburst on a sleeping pill, Ambien, known here as Stilnox. And the makers were quick to say that it had nothing to do with their drug. So the ABC television network in America just axed the show, completely axed the show. These incidents really are a continuation of the theme of reconciliation that we're talking about tonight, because this kernel of racism is deep within the American culture in a way that is similar to but very different from what happens here in Australia. And you might remember on last week's program we spoke with Jim Wallace of the Sojourners organization, and he said he thinks that there is a new emerging separation between black and white Americans in the Christian church, particularly over some evangelicals and their support of Donald Trump. To try to pull all of this together and project it forward to a better future, we went to Dr. David Smith. He's a lecturer in American politics at the University of Sydney and a fellow of the US Studies Centre. Welcome to Open House.
It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me.
Interesting times in the United States, and we'll get to the issues at hand at the moment, but here's part of what we heard last week from Jim Wallace of the Sojourners Movement.
I've never seen such racial division in the body of Christ in this country since maybe the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah.
And here's what happened. Some white evangelicals are saying, we didn't vote for Donald Trump because of his racial bigotry, but for other issues. But then black Christians are saying back to them, so I guess racial bigotry wasn't a deal breaker for you.
Well, David, what do you make of that?
Well, it reminds me that Martin Luther King said that the most segregated hour of American life is at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Ooh, ouch.
And yeah, unfortunately, that is still true. Black Christianity and white Christianity are still, for the most part, very separate in the United States. And there is not as much dialogue between the two as there should be. Black evangelicals and white evangelicals are like completely different entities for the most part in the United States. There are some churches where you will see both black and white Americans together, but for the most part that is not the case.
And I'm not denying it for a moment. Jim Wallace said it himself. There is undoubtedly racist undertones or overtones there. But can we also understand it in terms of the history because of segregationist policies?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it begins with slavery. It begins with African Americans not being allowed into white churches. And with black Americans developing a very different kind of perspective in their own churches, while white slave owners in the South tended to read all kinds of justifications for slavery into from the Old Testament.
Yes.
African Americans stressed the stories of liberation, the many stories of liberation that are in the Bible, and the Bible's tremendous emphasis on the equality of all human beings. And that has always remained the focus of African American Christianity. White evangelicalism, I mean, it's moved away from the slave justifying stuff, but it still doesn't really engage, I think, with the liberation elements of the Bible in the same way that African American Christianity does.
Well, and I did indeed hear the leader of a multiracial church in Washington, D.C., only a month or so ago, asking, what would it be like if we'd worked together all of those, in all of the time that we were separate, what would it be like if we'd developed our theology and our missiology and even our liturgy together?
Yes, yeah, it could have been a very, very different national story. And, I mean, certainly there have been times of cooperation. During the Civil Rights Movement, we had a predominantly Southern Black church cooperating with a lot of, it was mainly Northern white churches. I mean, there were a lot of white clergy who came down from the North during the Freedom Summers of 1963 to participate. But certainly the white churches in the same communities as the Black churches in the South, they weren't cooperating. They saw themselves as adversaries. And I think there's this tragic element of politics really just constantly getting the better of Christian solidarity in the United States.
Yes.
There's the, you know, white communities really putting race first, really seeing racial solidarity as what matters, supporting a political system that upheld white supremacy, and, you know, not looking to basically the demand for Christian solidarity, the kind of thing that Jim Wallace was talking about,
yes,
the body of Christ that encompasses all humanity, that came second to a brand of politics that had the opposite message. And I'm afraid that we are seeing the same thing to this day. The issues may not be exactly the same, but some of them are very similar. And there are a lot of white evangelicals now embracing that America First message of Trump, which,
yes,
you know, which says we don't want any more immigrants in the United States, no matter how desperate people who are usually fellow Christians coming from Mexico and Central America trying to cross the American border with children, treating them not even as human beings, let alone as fellow Christians, instead embracing his message of, you know, put up the walls and kick them out.
Well, let's go to Jim Wallace again on this issue of America First.
The body of Christ is the most diverse human community on the planet. And I'm very proud to be part of the body of Christ, which is why we said in our declaration that America First is a theological heresy, that idea, for an international body of Christ. I'm talking to right now to Christian brothers and sisters in Australia, and I want to say that I don't believe in America First. I want to tell you that I feel more connected to brothers and sisters in Australia in the body of Christ than I do to America First. So we said, no, not America First. We said we are one body, which means this treatment of women, this misogyny, is against the whole body of Christ. We're saying Jesus said, you'll know the truth, and the truth will make you free. So when lies are invading our public sphere, that's a theological issue. Jesus said leadership is servanthood. So leadership has domination and power and strong men all over the world.
Yes.
Not just in the U.S., but in Europe and all over the world.
Yes.
Philippines now, you know that very closely. Donald Trump likes these people. For us, being a servant, public service, not public tyranny. So we will resist authoritarian rule in this country because we're Christians. So all those questions for us are theological issues, not just political ones.
Well, that's Jim Wallace, the head of the Sojourners Movement, and his interview from last week's program, in which he said that their declaration that you heard mentioned there had started a moment which could become a movement. And our guest is David Smith. He's from the U.S. Studies Center, an associate with a specialty in, amongst other things, I guess, the politics of race and the whole issue of religious tolerance, religious freedom in the United States. David, what do you make of all of that, this growing... Because this is not a movement of the left, although there are people of the left there. Jim Wallace himself was on Barack Obama's presidential council, religious council. But what do you make of this? Is this a backlash that we expect might grow?
Yeah, I think that the important message here, and, you know, as you say, this is not exclusively a movement of the left. The important thing is Christianity is such a powerful and important force in American politics and in American social life that it's really impossible to see any progress happening without, I think, Christianity playing a major role in it. Yes. That when, you know, when moments of reconciliation in this deeply polarized country finally arrive, I think that Christian fellowship is going to play a very important role. And I think that certain things that are going to need to happen around sort of honest reckoning with the past, honest reckoning with the present and with the future, reconciliation, forgiveness, and also just, you know, facing up to the demands for justice. I think that Christianity and various Christian movements from right across the spectrum of Christianity will have to play a very important role in this. And I think that this is certainly something that Jim Wallace recognises.
You could be talking about Australia there, although it's worth pointing out and really putting a marker in the sand to say it would be a huge mistake to understand race relations in Australia by making a parallel to certainly the story of the blacks in America. It's more of a First Nations issue, but nevertheless,
the truth-telling... Yeah, there's a very, very... We certainly do have problems with racial injustice in Australia, but it's the configuration is very different. As we've already mentioned, in the United States, it goes back to slavery.
Yes.
And, I mean, the kind of disadvantage that has been inflicted on generations of African Americans, because, you know, slavery ended 150 years ago, but then that was quickly followed by a system of racial segregation and more or less forced labor that really emulated the conditions of slavery. When African Americans tried to get out of that rural indentured poverty and go to cities in the north, they found that, you know, they were unable to buy homes.
Yes.
They were often in sort of substandard living conditions.
They were in different schools. They had to sit at the back of the bus, and so it goes on.
Yeah, only jobs that were the only good jobs that were available to them were often federal government military contracts and things like that.
Yes.
So there was this whole, and to this day,
the military is largely black, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there is a big African American element in the military because, basically, since the days of Eisenhower, it's been one of the least discriminatory institutions in American life. But you see, to this day, African Americans just, they were locked out of a lot of the opportunities that white Americans took for granted. Especially after World War II, there was this massive growth in the American middle class that was the ultimate sort of consequence of the New Deal. Mm. African Americans were just excluded from a lot of the provisions of that, whether formally or informally. And so there is a direct line of continuity between past injustice and the present situation. Now, in Australia, I believe there is also a very direct line between the decimation and dispossession of Indigenous people and the current problems that Indigenous people face. But every, Leo Tolstoy said that all happy families are happy in their own way. All happy families are alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. That's kind of what it's like with race relations.
No, I take your point. I think it's a very good point, well made. So, David, all of this is good background for trying to understand what happened just this past week. Roseanne Barr's incredibly ridiculous. I mean, I don't know whether people fully appreciate, but she was likening black Americans to primates.
Yes. I mean, this is a racial slur that has a very long and nasty history. It's linked to this belief that African Americans are a lower order.
This is like social Darwinism, isn't it?
It's absolute dehumanization is the only thing that you can call it. So there's no other way of interpreting it. It was an absolutely heinous comment. Unfortunately, those comments do get made. There's in my field, of political science. There's more and more research showing that the kind of biological racism that we thought was largely dead, that is, people who really do believe that whites are essentially a superior species to blacks or to other people of colour, that racism, it's certainly not a majority of people, but it's alive and well. And it does continue to play a role in American politics. Barack Obama was subjected to this kind of thing when he was president. In a lot of ways, you can see the Trump presidency as a kind of backlash against the whole Obama period. So, yeah, so this comment from Roseanne Barr, I mean, it's very surprising when someone as publicly well-known and as famous as her and as sort of intelligent and someone who's had a public career makes a comment like this. But, you know, she...
She wants to blame her sleeping tablet. She's on what basically people might know it as Stilnox, otherwise known as one. She was taking a different version of the same drug. But so the company, I love the tweet from the company. Sanofi, did you see it? It said this. This is after she blamed her sleeping tablets for the tweet. She said, this is the company. People of all races, religions and nationalities work at Sanofi every day to improve the lives of people around the world. While all pharmaceutical treatments have side effects, racism is not a known side effect of any Sanofi medication.
it's not a plausible excuse. And we know that people make comments like this when they're sober. In Australia, a few years ago, Adam Goodes, the AFL player and one-time Australian of the Year, was called an ape at an AFL game a 13-year-old fan. Now, maybe you can say, you know, she was a young teenager. Teenagers say very stupid things quite often. But then a few weeks later, Eddie Maguire, the president of the Collingwood Football Club and a very well-known broadcaster, essentially repeated the same slur on air and then blamed it on tiredness. I mean, it's you don't need to look to sleeping pills as an explanation for this.
No, and we've seen the same thing in cricket as well. But people might be, people during the week were saying, oh, they overreacted. ABC immediately took it off air. Similarly, Starbucks shut their whole operation down for an afternoon and then conducted essentially anti-racism training for their staff because two black guys had been in a Starbucks conducting a meeting or waiting for a meeting like so many others. Starbucks is a place that people meet for meetings. And the owner of the store called the cops thinking they're up to no good. Appalling.
So if we think as
Australians that this was overreaction, we don't understand the full background, the depth of feeling about racism in the United States, I suspect.
No, and perhaps to fill in some context for people who might not be so familiar, in the US, coffee shops very much are public spaces. And when I lived there for 7 years, and I was very surprised the first time I walked into one and saw that people would sit there for hours and hours and hours, often without even buying anything. Yeah. I mean, in Australia, there's a basic etiquette of you buy something.
At least you buy something,
If you're in there, in the US, coffee shops, they're like bookshops are very similar and libraries are the same. They're places where people go to do work in public. So it's very, very normal for people to spend hours in a coffee shop without buying anything. And so by calling the cops on these two African-Americans, that's essentially saying, you know, these people have no right to be in a public space, conducting themselves in the same way that white people would conduct themselves. There's this presumption of guilt there, that they actually have to, you know, prove their worth in some way. And there's been a string of incidents in the United States of the police getting called on African-Americans really just because white people feel kind of suspicious or uncomfortable.
Yes.
There was an incident recently of a group of African-American women checking out of an Airbnb property, and when they didn't wave back or something, when a white person waved at them, the white person called the cops on them. It's becoming an increasingly a kind of prevalent incident. And it's Yeah, it really demonstrates this attitude that essentially African Americans don't belong in public space,
David,
unless
to go
they
back,
can prove that they belong there.
Yes, indeed. And to wrap up by going back to something that you referred to excellently during the first part of this interview, if your nation's theology is based around a separation idea, a complete misreading of the Bible, this is what the consequences are. But if your theology was based around the very simple and profound idea of Genesis, that everyone is made in the image of God, then the profound difference that that would make. So you're quite right, I think. I mean, sorry, I'm agreeing with you, therefore you're right. It's the church has to be involved. It's the church that holds the key to the answer to this in the US as here in Australia.
Yes, yeah. I mean, two-thirds of the population in the United States is Christian. Republicans do not have a monopoly on Christianity in the United States. And no race has a monopoly on Christianity in the United States. No gender, nobody. Mm. So, yes, I do think that Christian solidarity is going to play, I hope, a very important role in, finally helping to overcome the divisions that we're currently seeing in American politics and in American life.
It's been great to chat. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Dr. David Smith, lecturer in American politics from the University of Sydney. He's also an associate at the US Studies Centre. His book was called Religious Persecution and Political Order in the United States. What an insight that the church must be involved in finding reconciliation in that country, and so too in this country.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.